who could that be? And could there really be a supreme personality of Godhead? I mean, we're pretty sure that we exist, at least for now, but what about the existence of a supreme personality? We don't really know about that. Okay. And anyway, we have our list of things we're concerned with, everything from gasoline prices to mortgages to interest rates to will our kids have a better future than we did? On and on it goes. Or can we keep our marriage alive? Or so many things like that. We have our list of concerns. Everybody knows that, right? Now, I don't know about your personal list, how high the Krishna question ranks on your list. But according to the Vedas, the spiritual scientific texts of India, the perfection of the human form of life is when you start to become concerned, who is Krishna and what does Krishna have to do with me? Okay, that's one element of the verse today. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said. Of course, we must point out that a lot of people have difficulty accepting that if there is a Supreme Personality of Godhead, how can he speak? Now, we have no doubts about our own speaking ability. We're jabbering all day and night. But we somehow have to think that the Supreme God cannot talk. Now, we're just tiny little grains of sand on the beach. And we're talking. Why cannot the Supreme talk? Of course, there's a big difference between our words and the words of Krishna. We are very fallible, mistaken living entities who are subject to illusion. Does anyone here doubt that they are subject to illusion? The proof that we are subject to illusion is that we think we are this body. So many of you who come here from time to time, you have some spiritual interest. You feel that you're interested in spirituality, spiritual topics. You don't count yourself as being the run-of-the-mill population. You view yourself as being an alternative thinker, and you're interested in alternative lifestyles. But we must understand that the real alternative begins when I accept that I am not this body. That is the difference between a spiritualist and a materialist. It's not that you are spiritual just by wearing natural cotton clothes and eating organic food. That doesn't make you spiritual. Nor does it make you spiritual by having many pictures of the famous demigods of India in your home. No. What makes you spiritual at first is to understand you're not the body. Things begin there. So, we are speaking, and we are tiny living entities. Have you ever noticed the value of our words? Whatever is said by human beings, the situation always changes. It's not just our politicians who do that. It's also us. You may notice in your relationships with your beloveds or formerly beloveds or whatever, 1 year you're saying, oh, you are so wonderful, and the next year the words have to change. Everything in this world is like that we talk about. And this is a source of anxiety if we ever notice the situation. But we have to admit that a huge section of the population does not notice the problem with this temporality of their words, the temporariness of their words. They don't notice it because an essential part of material life is intoxication. That shields you from the realities. So everyone has to drink. To a lesser extent, everyone has to smoke something. And in this way, they can feel some protection against thinking about the reality. All right. When Krishna speaks, there is a gulf of difference. To understand that, we have to understand who Krishna is. But for now, let's at least theoretically, hypothetically accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. Just think, it could be true. I'm not sure. You can't say no. If you say no, not Krishna, that means you have some idea of what is the Supreme. As soon as, just like, someone tells me, this is New York here, I say, no, this is not New York. That means I have some definitive knowledge, understanding where we really are and how this is not New York. So if you say, no, it can't be Krishna, that means you have some knowledge. So when we ask you, what is that knowledge? Oh, well, we don't know, but it's not Krishna. That's what it comes down to. So therefore, for the sake of having a nice spiritual experience tonight, let's just consider the possibility that maybe, yes, Krishna. We'll give Krishna a fair chance. And what is he saying? He's talking to his devotee Arjuna. My dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence. Now, who here doesn't want to be relieved of misery? Our whole life is a struggle how to beat back distress and attract happiness. That's the name of the game, right? From morning till night, we're making schemes, we're making maneuvers, how to defeat the unhappiness and how to bring all the happiness to us. And we team together in families, hoping that a collective effort will be more successful. Yes, I will join together with a wife or husband, we will have children, and all together we'll have a very powerful unit for fighting distress and attracting happiness. This is how we think. So, everyone's concerned how to reduce misery. But Krishna is going to point out that on our own, it is impossible for us to figure out how to solve the happiness distress problem. It's something beyond us. We're like stuck in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And although we may be very proud of our swimming abilities, no matter how great an Olympic swimmer you are, if you're in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, you can't help yourself. So that is the problem with our happiness and distress. It's coming and going, coming and going. And we get so frustrated. We just want the pure happiness. But Bhagavad Gita will teach you that just like you have to have both sides of the coin, similarly, as soon as you go for happiness, you must get the flip side of the coin too, the distress. They go together. Male, female, pain, pleasure, rich, poor, happiness, distress. For those of you who read some metaphysical books, you understand that we're speaking of the world of duality. Now, how do you solve those dualities? Because the intelligent man or woman is always tired of being harassed by these dualities. You just want a clear shot at pure happiness. Now, how are you going to do that? So Krishna is speaking directly to this problem. What is Krishna's qualification? In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that everything emanates from him. Everything is Krishna's energy. Now, how many people do you know who will come up to you and say, everything emanates from me? Do you have any friends or relatives like that? Everything is my energy. No sane person will say like that. So that gives you some big incentive to hear from Krishna. He, in Bhagavad Gita, is presenting in chapter after chapter that all the energies, both matter and spirit, belong to me. So, he's saying, I'm going to impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization. When you know this, you will be relieved of the miseries of material existence. Now, naturally, everyone will say, sure. What can you teach me that's going to make me more comfortable? I'm ready to hear it. Sure. What can you teach me that will take away pain? I'm ready to hear that. Then we wonder, what's this other stuff in this verse? Krishna says to Arjuna, because you are never envious of me. Now, envious of Krishna? What's so special about Krishna? What's the concern about being envious of Krishna? This is a very important point, because as soon as you start to understand envy of Krishna, you're getting at the root cause of material existence. In other words, the confidential understanding is that I'm in this world imitating somebody. Now, who could that be? To understand who we are imitating, we have to understand Krishna. Then everything starts to click. Our whole history in this life and in previous lives starts to make sense. What I'm doing and why I'm failing. Okay. So we're going to hear a little bit from Srila Prabhupada's purport. As a devotee hears more and more about the Supreme Lord, he becomes enlightened. This hearing process is recommended in Srimad Bhagavatam. The messages of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are full of potency, and these potencies can be realized if topics regarding the Supreme Godhead are discussed amongst devotees. This cannot be achieved by the association of mental speculators or academic scholars, for it is realized knowledge. In other words, to understand Krishna, having an academic degree or a high material intelligence won't help you. To understand Krishna, you have to have brains on Krishna's terms. You have to be spiritualized. Now, what gets in the way of being intelligent according to Krishna's terms? Our envy of Krishna. All right, now we have to get to the basic facts. What is it about Krishna that arouses our envy? Everyone knows what it's like to be envious of someone. It means they have something you don't have. Look at his house. Better house than mine. He must be a materialist. Generally, our definition of a materialist is someone who has more than me. See, I, as a balanced person, have just enough. The necessities and a few needed comforts. But that guy, he's a materialist. He's got more than me. It's got to be too much if he's got more than me. So our definition of materialist means anyone who has more than me. Then we get envious. But as we explained earlier, the real definition of a materialist is someone who thinks, I am this body. And how do you tell whether someone thinks they're the body or not? It's not that they just have some theoretical spiritual notion. It's not that they've read some New Age spiritual books. Yeah, we're all spiritual. You judge by the action. Is their life dedicated to nourishing the spirit soul, or is their life dedicated to trying to gratify the bodily senses? Alright. So, envy means someone has something I don't have, and it's causing a reaction in me. So what does Krishna have that could bring about our envy? To answer that question, we have to know something about the science of God. Generally, when people think of the Supreme, they think of God as the creator, or God as the maintainer. And these functions of Godhead don't really make us envious. We're quite happy to let God do all that work. Yeah, go on and create. Go on giving the daily bread. Be the great baker. Build the universe in 6 days, and you have to take rest on the seventh day because you're tired. You do all those things. That's all right. You know, no problem with us. We'll go on with our partying. We'll go on with our making families and having hobbies and having loving exchanges. We'll go on expressing ourselves culturally and artistically and financially. and romantically. We'll do all those things. And God, you can create, you can maintain, you can even destroy the universe. After we're dead, you can destroy it. Just don't touch it now. So, that's our attitude. But when we start to hear about Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, something else comes to mind. Because immediately we are presented with Krishna as the Supreme Enjoyer. Now we're starting to get on touchy ground here. Because we think we are the enjoyer. And everything about Krishna demonstrates that the Supreme Lord is inconceivable and unlimited in enjoyment. In other words, for Krishna, the activities of creation, maintenance, and destruction of this universe are very insignificant. Unless we understand the Supreme as the topmost enjoyer, we can even feel sorry for God. It can seem that the way Christianity is presented is a way to make you feel sorry for God. You had one son, you sent him, and sorry about that. I mean, we're not speaking in a, you know, ridiculing way, but it can appear that way as it's presented. Of course, real Christianity is something else. As we've been discussing in our Bhagavad Gita classes on the weekdays, Jesus laid a very strict standard. He said, if anyone calls himself my follower, let him what? Let him believe in me? No, he said, let him take up his cross, deny himself, and follow me. So, we don't see much of that. So that is real Christianity. But without knowledge of God, you can start to feel sorry for God. He has one son, the son becomes crucified, he worked hard to create the world, he had to rest on the seventh day, he's always baking bread and giving the daily bread. And we ourselves, we've got so many enjoyable things to do, we think. Of course, we're all dancing to the tune of time. Although we forget about time, time does not forget about us. So our whole life is a race against time. We feel this psychological need. I've got to be happy. I've got to feel fulfilled before death comes. And because I'm a nice person, because I'm a good person, death won't come for me until the end of my life when I'm satisfied. We all feel that way. I've got time. I'm going to achieve my mission for the most part. I mean, there's going to be some bumps in the road, yeah, no doubt. But, you know, you just have to ride the waves. And I'm sure that because I'm a good person, I really think so, that therefore, the nature will let me live a long life. We have that psychological delusion. So, time is always taking things away, even our very body, which we love so much. So that makes a big problem in our enjoyment. There's always this nagging sense that it's going to end, and it will end. We were discussing the other night how we have an expression when something good happens to you. What do you say? This is too good to be true. And you're right. It's not true. Just see, by our own words, we're admitting the situation. I can't believe it. This is too good to be true. Our own words are letting us know that some or other, implicitly, we understand that our attempts to enjoy always meet with failure. So, to understand Krishna means we have to have some humility. That, although I don't understand Krishna yet, at least I know one thing, that I am the supreme failure at enjoying. Now that takes humility. Just try to think that. I am the supreme failure at enjoyment. No. Some of you here will think, this is really negative thinking. Others here, you'll think that this is true in the ultimate sense, but we have to be practical, that we should have a long life of nice economic development and nice family expansion. And then when we're 60 or 65, suddenly we can start to focus on the fact that actually it was all temporary. But let us just, with all humility, try to get our minds to feel comfortable with the point that we are failing at enjoying. This is, we can be the supreme in this way. We can. I am the supreme failure at enjoyment. One time I was speaking like this, and it was in New Zealand, and one lady, she just, as soon as I said that, she just got up and walked out of the room because someone tried to get her, please stay. No, no, this is the most horrible thing I've heard in my life. This is an offense against the human spirit. Yes, because some people feel that it's very destructive and negative in life, in your efforts to view yourself as a failure at enjoyment. Many people think the Vedas are very destructive because, just like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, from the highest planet in this universe down to the lowest, all are places of misery where repeated birth and death takes place. So many people look at the Vedas and they say, no, this is very fatalistic, this is very destructive. These scriptures are the reason why India doesn't have booming industrialization, because so many of their brightest scholars became sages and accepted these points of view that this world is a place of suffering, whereas in the advanced, wonderful Western nations, they know that you can be whatever you want to be. You can be president, you can be a top scientist, anyone can be rich. So they have this understanding, and therefore they have big economic development. This misunderstanding is there because people don't know what real wealth is. Real wealth begins with understanding I'm not this body, and that material life is temporary. Therefore, let me generate spiritual wealth. Those are the successful persons. We were discussing a few days ago. Suppose, let's say some of you, especially our Indian congregation, suppose you have children, you have a son 8 or 9 years old, and you ask your son, my dear boy, you're 8 or 9 years old, what do you think your occupation will be? What will your goal in life be? And suppose your son says, I want to put a stop to the cycle of birth and death and go back to God. What would you say? Well, the son, that's very good on Sundays when we go to the temple, but what I mean is something practical. I mean, how about a banker? How about an engineer? How about a doctor? No, the 8-year-old boy says, I want to go back to Godhead. I want to leave this world of repeated birth and death. Now, if that happened, how would you handle that? So many of us think that, okay, we understand what Krishna says in the Gita, but we have to be practical. After all, we have to have a roof over our head. We have to have food on the table. Actually, these things are not so special that they should absorb the main thrust of our life. Yes, you should take care of the body, even though it's not you. Yes, you should make sure that your family is properly situated. But that should not be the real or the main thrust of your life. Here, in this community, everyone has a roof over their head. There's very nice food on the table. So, these things don't require a great endeavor. But when we forget Krishna, then these ordinary materialistic activities become very problematic. And then we hold these activities up to Krishna and say, look, don't you understand, Krishna? I've got to be practical. Now, you've made some requests in Bhagavad Gita, but for those of us in the real world, we've got to pay rent. We've got to put food on the table. Now, I don't know, Krishna, if you understand that. In any case, yes, yes, we are your devotees. Just wait till we're old, and then we'll turn to you. If you can just hold off for a while. When we're 60 or 65, then we'll start thinking about moksha, liberation. So many of us feel that way. And this is a great shame, because the more you understand Krishna, the more you realize that Krishna consciousness links you with the greatest pleasure. And our whole life is based on trying to get pleasure. Now, we have discussed how we are the supreme failures at enjoyment. Next, it is necessary to understand how Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. You must understand that there is the supreme from which everything emanates. So then you must ask yourself, what is the nature of the supreme? Is the origin, source of everything matter, or is it spirit? Now, you yourself have a material covering, and your identity is the spirit soul. What is the nature of the source of everything? What is the nature of the source of all the matter and spirit? So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that I am the spiritual source of everything, matter and spirit. Krishna is fully conscious. We are a little bit conscious. You know what goes on in your body, but you don't know what goes on in everyone's body. But Krishna in Bhagavad Gita explains that you are the knower in your body, but I know what's going on in everyone's body. So that's what it means to have full consciousness. Now, Krishna has a body. It's not just that we are the only ones with bodies. The Supreme Lord has a body, but his body is all spiritual. There is no difference between Krishna's inside and his outside. There is no difference between Krishna's body and his self. So, with Krishna's spiritual body, which is non-different from him, he engages in spiritual activities of unlimited pleasure. So we've been discussing the past few nights in our Bhagavad Gita class during the week. It's easy to understand Krishna in this way. Just think, Krishna does all the things we love to do and fail, but Krishna does them with unlimited perfection. This is where the envy comes in. I remember speaking about envy of Krishna. I was at the university and I wanted to study Hinduism. It was at Yale University, New Haven, Connecticut. So I had just been through the phase of the political revolutions. I used to be into radical politics, but then I started studying books about what happened after the revolution, and I could see that revolutions don't accomplish any change. Just more of the same exploitation goes on, different persons in power. So I said, I've got to find something else to focus upon. Let's see what Hinduism is about. So the class in Hinduism was taught by a world-famous professor, authority on Hinduism. There was a problem, though. His class met at 8 a.m., and being a typical student of those times, I refused to take any classes before 11 o'clock. Because the usual schedule went that you went to sleep at 3:30 a.m. and you arose at 15 minutes to 11 and dashed to your first class. So I made the supreme sacrifice. I was going to find out about Hinduism by going to an 8 o'clock class. So I walked in the door and sat down. Some other students there, they were very curious, interested. So I remember the professor said, so, for today's assignment, I want you to read this section of the Upanishads and write a paper about whatever you think it means. I said, what? I got up 3 o'clock in the morning just to hear someone tell me to read the Upanishads and write whatever I think it means? No, I'm This is too much. I'm not getting up this early in the morning just to hear myself speculate. So, I said, I know what I'll do. Being an independent scholar, I'll go to the university bookshop, and there I will get the books for the course, and I'll read them on my own. So one of the books was a Bhagavad Gita, so-called. Just like we have Bhagavad Gita as it is, well, this was a Bhagavad Gita as it is not. Or Bhagavad Gita as the professor who commented on it would like it to be. So, I remember, I bought the book, I took it to my apartment, I was thumbing through it, he had the translations in the front and his commentaries in the back. So I just started flipping through the commentary, and I just found one sentence. He said, Krishna is a concept meant to satisfy both the sentimentalists and the intellectuals. I said, what is this? Now, somehow that Krishna saved me from reading this contaminated so-called Gita, because my mind was still in the mindset or paradigm of a radical student. So immediately I thought, aha, I know what's happened. This British colonialist oppressor has taken the Indian people's book and twisted it. So I refused to read another page, and I took it back to the bookstore and got my money back. In any case, my thinking was wrong, but some or other, Krishna saved me from reading this envious translation. How dare this professor, although world famous, how dare him say that Krishna is a concept meant to satisfy the intellectuals and the sentimentalists? Nowhere in Bhagavad Gita does Krishna say that. Yet he wants to make a profit out of Krishna's words. So Srila Prabhupada always said, you want to make your own commentary on Bhagavad Gita, that's fine, but don't call it Bhagavad Gita. Call it your own book. But no, because they're envious of Krishna, they want to take Krishna's words because they're so brilliant and then push Krishna out of the picture. Krishna is just a concept. He's imaginary. So that's one way that envy of Krishna manifests, by so-called scholars and intellectuals trying to squeeze Krishna out of Bhagavad Gita. And it takes hard work to get Krishna out of Bhagavad Gita. Now I'll give you another example of envy of Krishna. During the university days, I had a friend, and he had a girlfriend. And so she came over. He was my roommate. So she came over, and I had a Krishna book. And so she picked up the Krishna book, and right on one of the front pages, it says, Krishna, the Supreme Enjoyer. So I'll never forget her reaction. She opens the book, she reads, Krishna, the Supreme Enjoyer. That's my job. I was astonished. I mean, I was a non-devotee at that point, but still I was astonished. Krishna, the Supreme Enjoyer. What's Krishna doing, trying to horn in on our market? Enjoyment, in other words, she's saying enjoyment is our specialty. If there's going to be God, he certainly can't be the enjoyer. He should just do all the work while we enjoy. Now, when you understand that Krishna unlimitedly excels at enjoyment, and that all we have to do to enjoy is to hear about Krishna, life becomes very simple. But just try to think about this for a second. You mean that Krishna is so extraordinary that I can be happy just by hearing what Krishna does? It's got to be more than that. I don't know if I can accept that. This has got to be a bit too narrow. Some people feel that whenever you think that a spiritual practice can solve all your problems, you should understand that you really don't understand enlightenment. Never think that a spiritual practice can solve all your problems. But Krishna exactly says that in the Gita. He's telling Arjuna, because you're never envious of me, I'm going to give you confidential knowledge by which you won't have any more problems. And what is our position? No, it can't be true. Or it's probably nice poetry, but we all have to be practical in our own way. So therefore, everyone has their own formulas how to avoid Krishna. Basically, your way of avoiding Krishna boils down to three things. Those three things manifest a little differently in Indian culture and in Western culture, but basically it's the same. What are those three things? First of all, just follow your own experience. Your own experience is the best teacher. What's the second thing? Honor your uniqueness. Become really fascinated by how you are unique, and that should be your meditation. And what is the third thing? Always remember, take time to cultivate your idiosyncrasies. So these are the three golden rules. Although these three things manifest differently in Indian culture and Western culture, still it's the bottom line. It basically means I'm hung up in myself as the enjoyer. Now, as long as we are captivated by these three things, we cannot hear about Krishna. Hearing about Krishna means I'm honoring Krishna's uniqueness. How does he do this? Whatever he does, whether he dances or fights or romances or pleases his mother or plays with his friends, he's inconceivable. So a devotee is one who's always meditating on the uniqueness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After all, what's so unique about our life? We're born, we don't know where we've come from, and we're going to die soon, and we don't know when. Yet we're supposed to acknowledge our own idiosyncrasies and cultivate them, and honor our uniqueness and follow our own experience. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying, follow my experience. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I know everything, past, present, and future. I know everyone, but no one knows me. So that is the person we should become fascinated with. And it's easy to become fascinated with Krishna when we start to understand that Krishna is the Supreme Enjoyer. He is a person, but not a limited person. Our problem is that as soon as we hear person, we think limitation. Therefore, we cannot conceive of God as a person. We think it must be an impersonal force. God must be the whatever. When you get to the top of the mountain, you realize that all religions are leading to the same thing, the whatever, the you know, the... So many people, whenever I ask them, please tell me something about the Supreme, they always just end up saying, well, you know. You know what I mean. Or else they say, whatever, you know, the whatever, you know. That means you don't know. We know our friends, we know our families, and their temporary personalities. Our perfection of life is to know Krishna. Krishna's enjoyment is all spiritual. His associates have spiritual bodies. Krishna has much better things to do than enjoy matter. Even when Krishna periodically comes to this world of matter, he is not affected by the material energy. It's his energy. He doesn't submit to it. He doesn't come under its control. But our problem is that whenever we try to enjoy in the world of matter, we are completely under its control. And we think that there is happiness here. I'll give you one last example. If you've ever been in any sheep farming countries, anyone here from any areas where they do a lot of sheep farming? No. All right. In New Zealand, there are more sheep than people, so you get a lot of realizations watching sheep. The farmers, they have a special area of their farm. They have hundreds, thousands of acres. So they have a special area where they keep the lambs. Now, the rest of the sheep, they have thousands of sheep. They're just roaming around on mountains and valleys, chewing dry grass, chewing not-so-succulent things. Farmer doesn't care that much about them, so they just wander through the forest eating scrub and bushes and things like that. But the lambs, because certain human beings love veal from baby lambs. A farmer has a special plot of land for them, and it's fenced off, maybe 1 acre. And this 1 acre or 2 acres has salad greens planted all in rows. And so he has the little lambs eating in this special area. And that's all they do, day and night. They just nibble and nibble and nibble. And there's, you can see the smile on their face. Oh, this is the ecstasy. This is the highest thing in life. Those other sheep out there are scrounging around in the valleys and mountains, chewing brown grass and twigs. And we are in the special nectar area. Wonderful, tasty, delicious salad greens just planted row after row. So you can actually see the smile on their face. Their wool, the coat of wool, is shining. It's effulgent because they have such a healthy diet. And they just nibble and eat day and night. That's all sheep do is eat. But these sheep, especially, they are having like a feast nonstop. And sometimes they just get so ecstatic from eating these salad greens all in a row, they just lay on their side in rapture. Now suppose you're coming from Los Angeles, you don't know much about sheep raising. Suppose you drove by and you saw this special area where the little lambs are kept. What would you think? Oh, how happy they are. How nicely kept they are. Look, they're so happy. Look, they're beautiful. Their coats of wool are shining. Such a beautiful gray color. How humane that their most delicious foodstuffs are all laid out in a row for them. You would think that. But someone who knows would understand what? This is the special finishing section of the farm, as the farmers call it. That whatever lambs are in the finishing section are there for a reason. They're not just getting succulent foodstuffs all in a row because the farmer is very compassionate. No. He's fattening them. And every day he comes out with the scale and he weighs them, making sure he's getting his money's worth by giving them all this opulent food stuff, making sure they're picking up weight nicely. But the little lambs don't know that. I mean, this is wonderful. Life's never been so good. They don't understand, even when they're being taken to the slaughterhouse, they don't understand. So until right when they're about to be slaughtered, they're led up a ramp. And then right when they get to the top of the ramp, where someone's waiting to cut their throat or to club them over the head, at that moment they realize they're about to be slaughtered, and then they start screaming. So we are like these little lambs. We're so content with our luxuries and conveniences. Just see what society is providing. Just see what conveniences. I have a computer. I have a very nice car. My son will go to the university. My daughter is having a child. Life is going on in a nice way. I'll be having a pension coming for sure. My corporation will certainly remain solvent without a doubt. Social Security will be there. The money in the bank will be safe. Inflation will be kept in check by the president. So we're like little lambs in the finishing section. And time is marching on. Therefore, it probably be better to start listening to Krishna. Understanding Krishna as the supreme enjoyer. Not simply fearing, okay, I'm going to die, so I better listen to Krishna. That's better than nothing. But in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is giving you a better reason than fear. He's giving you the reason that he is the supreme enjoyer. You have a pleasure-seeking capacity, and your pleasure-seeking capacity will be perfected upon connecting with Krishna. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much. It's time for the feast. Hare Krishna.